Hey everybody, it is Dawn Sarah with Sex Gets Real, and this week there is a very rainbow guest joining me. I'd like everyone to say hello to Krista Ann. Hi, Krista Ann.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
Are you blinded yet?
Well, for those of you that don't know Krista Ann, she's basically like a human rainbow bright. And there's rainbows everywhere, from clothes to hair to all the things and the website. And it's one of the things that I adore about you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. It's one of the things I adore about me too.
So yes, thank you for bringing lots of color into everybody's lives.
Yeah, no, I will send a like selfie of what I'm wearing right now because I have like full blown screaming bright rainbow hoodie on.
Oh, nice.
Like, I'm pretty sure you can see me from space.
As it should be.
As it should be. Like, my hair is a normal color right now, so I've got to, like, step up the rest of my rainbow game.
The clothes. Heck the clothes. Yeah.
Yes. The accessories. All that good stuff. Anyway. Yes.
Well, you talk about so many things that are really important to me and that I think our listeners are going to find just really relevant. And from your experience at sex positive sex stores to your orgasm quest to talking about depression and sexuality and feminism and like all the things that I love so much.
Early days of queer porn, even.
Ah.
That's my absolute start, was like the dawn of queer porn on the internet. Oh. I was never, like, famous, but I was on a bunch of, like, the little sites that are pretty much shut down.
Oh, hell yes!
Oh, that was a fun time to be alive.
I can't even imagine how awesome that would have been.
It was so much fun. I was living in a much larger body than the one I am currently in. And that is one of the ways that I learned how to love my bigger body instead of being ashamed of it. It was great for, like, learning my sexuality on my own terms. And the culture of the internet hadn't spread to the masses yet. And so like discourse was actually pleasant.
Oh God, I missed that.
Yeah. Like there was so little trolling and harassment and I don't think I could handle it today as bad as things are, but I like to go back to like the golden days.
Yeah. Back when people were actually nice and curious instead of just trolly and shitty.
Yes.
Yeah.
Instead of just trolly and shitty and that everything is automatically an argument.
Right.
Because I do a lot of writing online for any number of the topics that you just talked about. And like my mom keeps up with how much harassment I'm getting. And I was just like, this is just the way it is, Mom. Like,
yeah.
I can tweet the grass is green in my backyard and somebody's going to tweet back how they hope I get raped on that grass. Like,
yeah.
That's just how it is now. Like,
yeah.
I'm okay, Mom. It's not.
It's new normal, especially for women and queer folks and anyone who is talking about like feminism and sexuality. It's just it's shitty that's just how it is.
It's just how it is. But yeah. Hopefully, like, we can change this.
Yeah.
It's been okay in the past. I was there. I remember. We can get it back to okay. Like, you can stop mansplaining.
I actually had an argument today where I pulled out a little mansplaining meme, and the recipient of it did not take it well.
But you can stop mansplaining. You can do it well, actually.
That's right. Well,
that was my partner's joke, and I'm forever, like, I'm stealing it and using it, but I'm giving him credit because it's fantastic.
Yes, it is. And people totally have fallen in love with you because of your orgasm quest,
mm-hmm.
which is something that I would love for you to tell all of the listeners about in case they don't know about it. I know that it was something that you did about a year and a half ago, but, I mean, MTV gave you a call today about it. So let's inform our listeners about what Orgasm Quest is and how it happened and what brought you on that journey.
Okay. So quick backstory. I came out of the womb depressed and I came out of the womb with my hand on my clit. I was raised in a sex positive way. My mother wouldn't call it as such, but like I was masturbating constantly. Like my hand found my clit and it just hasn't left.
Nice.
And, you know, it was my feeling good stuff.
Yeah.
And it was, I just had to do it in like with clean hands and in my bedroom. Like those were the rules for like 3-year-old masturbating me.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so like I won with parenting, like my mom was the best. And so I learned through getting through life as a depressed person that I could use masturbation and orgasms as like a pick me up. Like, you know, if you get out of bed and you get this done, you know, then you can jack off. Or, cause I've had a lot of suicidal ideation all my life. It was just like, if you kill yourself, you can't come anymore. And like that has literally saved me more times than I can count, especially when I was younger.
Yeah.
So like masturbation was just one of my tools that I used to navigate the world as a depressed person.
How wonderful.
And it was great. I was on antidepressants from age, I want to say 8. I say different ages at different times because I remember it differently, but somewhere in like the 7 to 9 range, mm-hmm. I started on antidepressants and made it, you know, like stayed medicated through my teens and then lost access to health insurance in my early 20s. Mm-hmm. Masturbation became like my biggest tool for dealing with my depression. And I had a lot of great therapists, so I had a lot of tools. And I went off meds and I wasn't in therapy. And I did a pretty bang up job surviving through my 20s, jerking off nonstop. And working at a sex positive sex toy store really helped there. Because mm-hmm. I had endless supplies of items to try,
of materials to enjoy,
all sorts of goodness. And because I had been masturbating as long as I could remember and just not having any kind of sexual shame wrapped around masturbation or my sexuality, like I could always come. And it became like a party trick. Like, wiggle the seat and see if Krista has an orgasm. And it was awesome. Like, and then orgasms were one of my many superpowers. And I had like earth shaking, see God experiences. Like my orgasms created their own worlds. It was just amazing. And then I had kids, and with kids comes postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. And I had kids, and then I went through a divorce, and then I had another kid, and completely turned my life all around. And understandably, had quite a setback as far as how my mental health was doing.
Yeah.
So, not this last December, but the December before, I went to my doctor and was like, I need to go back on meds. I've tried all of the SSRIs, and they don't do enough to make the side effects worth it. Mm-hmm. What can we do? And she decided that because I also have fibromyalgia, I should try tricyclic antidepressant. They were real popular in like the 50s and on until SSRIs hit the scene, and then they kind of scaled back. And actually, amitriptyline, which is the antidepressant I went on, does not have loss of orgasm as one of its main side effects. But I was lucky enough that my doctor did have this conversation. Probably because she's through Planned Parenthood, but we talked about like my orgasms and that there may be sexual side effects. And I was totally full of myself and was like, yeah, those don't happen to me. Cause like the only other meds that had any, I had gone hypersexual. So it was just like, yay, I'm going to feel better. And I'm going to want to come even more. Life is great. And so I got on this med and it works. And it works beautifully. And for the first time, I was waking up and wanting to get out of bed. And I was not suicidal once a day. Like, my brain did not, like, respond to stubbing my toe with, like, it wouldn't hurt if you killed yourself. Mm-hmm. And, like, I had learned how to, like, deal with that and make it into a joke in my head. But that was gone. And it was this magical, happy land for about 6 weeks. And then I started noticing that it was becoming harder and harder to orgasm. Mm. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. And just over that 6 weeks period, it went from harder to harder to harder to harder to nah, nothing.
Wow.
And I was losing it because I was not about to give up this medication that made me want to live.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of important. But I also am not going to give up having orgasms because that's important. And so I decided that I would start writing about what I was going through. And I've been online, again, since the dawn of queer porn, and I've been blogging across platforms throughout my life. And I've had like this loyal 500 to 1,000 people who have like followed me mm-hmm. over the decade, which is pretty impressive. I'm very happy with them. And then all of like my sex geeks and my sex educator friends and other people who are in the sex positive world. And I figured that I would just like write this out for them and for me, so I could keep track of like what was working and what wasn't. And it would give me something regular to blog about, because I hadn't really been talking about sex a lot publicly. So I messaged a couple of friends who work at, like, I messaged my friends at Tantus, and I messaged my friends at SheVibe and Good Vibrations, and we're like, so this is what I want to do. What kind of items, like, would you suggest I try? Let's partner up. I need a magic wand for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so Good Vibes was kind enough to send me a magic wand.
Aww.
Because I knew that you can turn on the nerve endings through any kind of erogenous zone, but for me specifically, through my labia, through my vulva, the whole nine yards, with really strong vibration.
Yeah.
And it's training, and it's working. And so I committed that I was going to spend 15 minutes a day, usually after I put the kids to bed, just working the magic wand in circles around my vulva, like spending some time on my clit, like just going whole shebang, mm-hmm. so to speak, and see if I could get feeling back, if I could get pleasurable feeling back, you know, could I eventually train myself to orgasm again? And so I wrote up this post, and I bounced into our bedroom and was like to my partner, I was like, baby, I wrote a post. I said I was going to do something and I did it. I'm so proud of me. Like the next day, my dear friend Rachel said, can I interview you for the Philly City Paper on your orgasm quest? I think this is really neat. And I was like, yeah, sure. And we did this quick little interview, and I thought that was just the coolest thing. And that was like the most awesome thing. I'm so happy. And I, like, 24 hours after that went live, it was a Friday night, a friend was over, and she had brought me a burrito, and we were sitting down to, like, watch a movie, and I just quickly checked my tablet, and I was like, oh, Sunny retweeted me. That's awesome. Wait, is that Link Jezebel? I have to go see. I think I'm on the front page of Jezebel. And, like, I froze for a second, and then I leaped up and threw my burrito everywhere. And ran through the house looking for a laptop, which is the most absurd thing. My partner is like a tech god, and so there's like internet capable devices within arm's reach wherever you are. But running through the house, like, I think I'm on the front page of Jezebel. It just exploded from there.
Oh, people need to hear it.
Over the next week, I was on BuzzFeed and Huffington Post and in America and in the UK, and I was getting coverage in Australia. I was on a website in Nigeria.
Wow.
Everywhere. It was amazing. Ugh. And terrifying, and completely sent me sideways.
Like, yeah.
And then I like go and I'm looking at my Twitter feed and I'm updating Orgasm Quest, and it's a hashtag, and it's going strong, and other people are coming in and talking about their experiences, and like there's this beautiful community that's kind of coming out of this hashtag, and I'm so happy. And I'm going through the hashtag and I see something where that Dr. Drew is going to be talking about the Orgasm Quest that night on his show.
Oh, wow.
Dr. Drew is not always the most sex positive person.
I agree.
And Dr. Drew is not always the best when it comes to empowered feminine sexuality.
Also true.
And I had not seen his show, but looking at the website, it looked rather clickbaity in television form, and which sent me directly into one of the worst panic attacks of my life. Because I was like, Dr. Drew is about to tear my life apart on live TV, and I'm not going to be able to do anything about it. Like, this was not what I planned.
Yeah.
But the Twitter army came to the rescue, and I was just like, you are talking about Orgasm Quest. How interesting. This is news to me. Hi, I'm Krista, and this is my Orgasm Quest. Pay attention to me. And then my Twitter friends and the Twitter army grew, and everyone was tweeting at them like, this is BS. You can't do a show without talking to her. She's right there. She's waving at you being like, I'm available. And so the producers messaged me very quickly, and they had apparently a plan to bring me on all along, which, you know, maybe. They were very lovely, and I thoroughly enjoyed talking to them. And so, like, I don't want to talk shit.
Yeah.
Maybe they were, and they just weren't, they hadn't reached out to me before they tweeted. And so the next thing I know, I am calling in to live TV to talk to Dr. Drew about how I use orgasms to deal with my depression, and had a very interesting conversation with him and his lovely panelists.
Mm.
And if you notice my voice changing there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a little bit of bitterness. I really love having someone yell, "Don't you ever think of your children," at me. Oh, that's a thing that happened.
Oh.
And Dr. Drew started to say something, and he stopped himself, and I am forever thankful that he stopped himself in questioning, like, my parenting and my being this open about my sexuality online.
Yeah.
And, you know, spoke up and said, you know what? My kids are sometimes uncomfortable about this, because I was going to be like, yeah, you want to talk to me about being public with sexuality and children? Because I think you have a higher profile than I do. And but we ended up having a really nice conversation. He and I had a really nice conversation. His panelists can all just get shot out of a cannon straight into the sun.
Well, I'm glad he was at least open to having a good conversation.
At the end of it, he talked about how, like, he respected me and my approach, and it was interesting. And I was then on his radio show the next day. But Dr. Drew respects me. And that is not something that I ever imagined saying.
I love that it all just stems from you finding something that made you feel good from a mental health perspective and feeling like, wow, this medicine is working. This is making me feel better about my life. But it's had the side effect, and it's a side effect I'm not willing to really live with. And so I'm going to start experimenting and sharing my journey. And then it led to all of these things, which I think is just so incredible.
And it led to all of these things, which was incredible and wonderful. And it's still going.
Yeah.
As you said, like, MTV reached out to me this morning. I haven't done very much with Orgasm Quest between now and then for a variety of reasons. But I still get probably 10 emails a day from people who are going through the same exact thing.
Yeah.
When it was going on, I was getting thousands upon thousands. It was incredible. But it's sexual side effects with medications.
Yeah.
Is so incredibly common.
Yeah.
It is so incredibly common. I mean, and you can, like, sexual side effects can come from Sudafed.
Yeah.
Like, you can get it from OTC things as well, but much stronger in medications, and especially mental health medications.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just a recipe for disaster if people are not aware that this is a possibility. And most people are not, because medical, like, in the United States, we do not exactly have a sex positive healthcare system.
Absolutely. Yeah. Doctors don't know how to ask the questions, and they don't know how to have the conversations. And I completely agree with you. You know, and it's not just with drugs, it's with different kinds of sexual identities and different kinds of bodies. And if you're disabled or if you're fat, then sex never comes into the conversation either. And
well, if you're, and like, as,
as someone who lived most of their life in a much larger body, like, I'm fat, which is the cause of all of my problems, obviously.
Right.
And the fatness is totally causing my migraines. The medical establishment around here is not the most positive, period, but especially when it comes to sexuality.
Yeah.
And so if you have somebody who is going through depression or something similar or high anxiety, and they're, first off, just getting onto medication is such a huge step for most people because there is just stigma attached to being on meds.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go and, like, suddenly you're losing libido, or you're losing the ability to orgasm, or you're losing sensation, and you already feel broken.
Yeah.
It compounds it so strongly.
Yes.
And, like, the messages that I was getting from people were talking about how their partners had left them because they had completely lost interest in sex and didn't know why, and their partners took it personally, and or, like, huge relationship problems. It just, all sorts of things were coming from this feeling of being broken and not understanding that what they are experiencing is completely normal.
Yeah.
Completely normal. And that's, like, when it comes to, like, when it comes to sex, the first question everybody asks is this normal?
Yep.
And when it comes to depression, like, is this normal? And when you don't have an answer on either of them, and they're slamming into each other, that is a huge recipe for disaster. You should not have to give up sex to not want to kill yourself.
Right.
Like, I don't want to live without my orgasms and my wonderful sex life.
Yeah.
But I also don't want to live suicidal.
Right.
And this shouldn't have to be an exchange. This shouldn't have to be something I have to give up. And professionals and just people, period, should understand that it's not selfish to prioritize your sexual pleasure if you are a sexual person.
Right. Yeah. And
there's a lot of people who, like, think that, like, because I'm calling it Orgasm Quest, like, I am promoting the, like, orgasm-centric sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to just get it out there that I'm not. Like, I do not believe that the orgasm is the end-all, be-all of a sexual experience.
Right.
But for me, having my orgasms was incredibly important. I'm also lucky enough that my current partners are all on the same page, and that orgasm doesn't have to be the end-all, be-all, and we're all just having fun as long as we want to be having fun.
Yep. That's and I think that's so important. That's something that I'm constantly stressing to listeners who write in feeling really frustrated with orgasm is, you know, actually on a recent episode, I had August McLaughlin from Girl Boner, and she was talking. I know, I love her too. And she was saying something about how, like, an orgasm you may experience orgasm, but it's not about getting to orgasm, because orgasm isn't the goal. It's just something that might happen along the way.
It's a fun destination point for some people.
Right.
But yeah, no, I going through an anorgasmic period completely changed how I viewed a lot of my sex life. I found, like, a deeper, different kind of pleasure in being completely focused on my partner's pleasure.
Yeah.
Because, like, I would get, like, the sex still felt great for the most part.
Yeah.
But, like, the intimacy and the bonding and all everything that comes with sex was still great. And I was still enjoying myself, but, man, it was really fun to, like, be, like, even more connected to their pleasure. And, like, what can I do? We can go over here. Oh, this is fun. Like, I like to experiment.
Yeah.
It was a delightful time.
And actually, that, I think that is going to come up again in some of the listener questions that we're going to tackle today. So I'm so glad you said that, because I think that's actually going to be in some of the answers that we offer.
Yay.
I know. Great. So do you want to dive into some of the amazing questions that I've got lined up for us?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, the first one is from somebody who actually struggles with anxiety, and I think it just aligns so beautifully with the work that you do and Orgasm Quest and all of the things that you've been sharing with us. So I think this is a perfect way to kind of like ease into some questions. So if you're ready to go, I got an email from someone who named themselves A4, which stands for anxiously awaiting an answer.
Aww. Yeah. Hi, anxious. I live with you. Like anxiety is, I have anxiety about my anxiety. So
know, right. Me too.
Empathy is already in place. Let's do this.
Okay. So here's the email. It says, "Hi, Dawn. Love the podcast. I especially love when you mention you struggle with anxiety. I'm a 24-year-old woman, and I think I might be bi, but the problem is I have severe anxiety and trauma in my past. So I've never actually had sex with anyone in order to find out. My question is, how do you put yourself out there and have sex if you're totally stuck in anxiety? I want to meet people. I want to experience sex. But between panic attacks and feeling overwhelmed in social scenes like bars and concerts and just having no fucking clue what I want, I feel stuck and lonely. Is there any hope for me? Thoughts? Help? Anxiously awaiting an answer." So what are your thoughts?
There is totally hope for you because that is me and I get laid all the time.
Woohoo! Boom!
And I totally get that because I have been in that place of like, I think I'm bi, but I haven't actually experimented or tried it in the real world. So, and I don't know how to do that. So my comfort zone is not the bar scenes or concerts or outside of my house, really. Pretty much all of my finding people has been online. Back in when I was mostly doing it, like it was OkCupid, I would find people that I connected, that I found attractive, and that I connected with on a level beyond just the attraction.
Yeah.
So that there was something for me to focus on and go back to when the anxiety would creep up. There is nothing wrong with you. Everybody has anxiety.
Yes.
Even people who do, like, I have a trauma past. I have panic attacks. I feel you 1,000%. There are a lot of people who identify with that feeling, and you can find them online. If that is your comfort zone and you're emailing into a podcast, so I'm going to assume that that is at least some of your comfort zone. What I did was I have put it out there that I have anxiety, but I still want to meet people and going through conversations and slowly inching my way in. And when it gets too anxiety provoking, you know, stepping back.
Yeah.
And I think that you will find at least one, if not a number of someone's who understand.
Right.
Or who can relate. And from there, it's just moving at your comfort level.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, something that's really surprised me, and I've talked about it a couple of times, especially when it comes to like putting myself online in a fat body, was it's just kind of a universal rule. I'll say specifically for women, I think it happens to everybody, but especially for women online, you know, it's like for every 100 messages that you get, 98 of them tend to be crap. Like it's just people who are just messaging every single match or swiping right on 100% of people because they're lazy or whatever it is. But then when you get those one or two people who are actually interested and who actually read your profile, I've found that a lot of people are genuinely interested in like having an exchange. And I've found that every time I'm really upfront about either who I am or what I want or what my background is, that by being open and vulnerable, then people kind of self-select. Mm-hmm. And the ones who do end up actually having the meaningful conversation with me are the people who read that and weren't scared off by it or who don't care. You know, like
I am nodding furiously along.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's like it's either a neutral for them or they're like, oh, me too. And so I totally agree with you. Like, I think that if bar scenes and concert scenes aren't your thing, and they're totally not my thing, like, I get super, super overwhelmed and triggered when I'm around a whole bunch of, like, drunk dudes. Like, that's I can't. Yeah,
that screams unsafe for me, too.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just, like, every inch of me is just, like, running. Like, run away, run away! And so online has been wonderful for me in being able to put together a profile very carefully and being able to screen and have conversations and then moving to text messages and going at my own pace. And I think the other thing too is, one, it's an abundant world. So for every person who doesn't want what you have to offer, there's a whole bunch more behind them. And two, you know, if you start talking to somebody and they start pushing you or they don't respect the fact that you are feeling a little panicky about something, then woohoo, you've just found out this person isn't worth your time and you can move on.
Yeah. And especially like because the bisexuality was brought up, I will say that if you can comfortably, and this is a big if, and it may be too panic inducing, and I totally get that. But if you can message a woman that you find attractive, just to say hi, women tend not to message other women in my experience.
Yeah.
And I have every time that I have sent someone a message or sent a woman a message, I have gotten the most polite no in the history of polite no's or awesome conversation and a few lovers.
Like, yeah.
It, but I mean, that's a tall order, and I know that that's a tall order, but if you can get to the point where you can like say hi and mention something that you saw in their profile, that's a bonding point.
Yep.
There, I have discovered that being open and honest and vulnerable, like you said, is incredibly freeing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just kind of helps to weed out all the jerks that you don't want to waste your time on.
Yeah.
You know, I would much rather put in my profile and or in my very first couple of exchanges, like, here's who I am, here's what I'm looking for, so that the people who don't want those things don't bother, versus being really vague and trying to be someone I'm not. And then as we start getting to know each other and we put a lot of time into each other, and then they're like, well, I don't want to be with somebody who's like this. You know, it's like, then it's just so much more confusing and it can be really challenging. So I say just be really upfront about what you're looking for, the pace that you want to go. You know, I was always, back in the days when I was doing lots of hookups, I was always very upfront in my profile and in my initial messages. Like, I don't have sex on the first date. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while I would choose not to follow my own rule, but it was always my choice. But I always wanted to put that up front so that people weren't thinking we're going to bang the second that we meet up, because that didn't feel safe to me.
Right.
And something else that that's really stuck with me is Joellen Naughty has talked about how, because of her depression and anxiety and just introversion, that a lot of times she has sex with folks via texting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's not a comfortable medium for me, so I forget about it a lot. It's one of my personal life blinds me to my professional life. But the rich sex lives can be had out of texts alone.
Yeah, or emails
You know, what have you. And you don't even have to go to like the sexy selfies point if you don't want to. You're in control of everything this way.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing that I'll just offer too is whether you have anxiety or depression or none of the above, putting yourself out there and potentially being rejected or saying the wrong thing and feeling awkward and having no idea what the fuck you're doing is normal.
Mm-hmm, totally, you know, normal.
We all feel that way.
I still feel that way. I don't know if this is helpful or not. It doesn't really get easier, but you get more practiced. Like, you get more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I find, like, my anxiety still jumps up before I do a podcast like this or I send an email. Like, everything ticks my anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And you get more practiced.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the important part is, like, giving yourself permission to just feel and be who you are, but at the same time, allow yourself to just try stuff and to be nervous about it and to be awkward and to fumble. And the people that matter are going to find that endearing or are going to find that attractive or are just like not going to care because it's a neutral for them. And those are the people that you want to find.
Yeah. Those are the people you want to fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that I have PTSD, that I have herpes, and that I am an introvert is all on my, like, my profile. Like,
yeah.
Up front, like, here you go. Take it or leave it. This is me.
Yeah.
And it takes a bit to get there. It takes a bit to get that comfortable with putting yourself out there. But if you can make your profile as genuine as possible, I've found that you get genuine responses.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, you know, if there are certain types of events or social gatherings that you do enjoy that do feel safe, like game night with friends or book clubs or something where it's a lot more conversation or it's a lot more mellow or, you know, it just feels a lot safer, then also open yourself up to, you know, the possibility of just making friends there and then maybe something else will happen. Yeah.
Co-signed all of that. And there's, you know, if it's not working out for you, there is always that glorious masturbation.
Heck yes.
You can totally explore bisexuality very strongly by yourself, either with your hand or a selected beautiful gadget of your choosing. But
that's right.
It's my job to bring up masturbation as often as possible.
As you should. So, I fully endorse that message as well. So hopefully A4, that was helpful. Thank you so much for writing in and for being so brave to just... share your story with us and to ask the question. You are not alone. I know there's a lot of listeners who probably feel the same way. And so, yeah, just thank you for listening and for writing in. That was wonderful.
Yeah. You're brave enough to write in, which means you're brave enough to take the first steps. And that means you're a step ahead of a lot of people. So you are on the right path.
Yeah.
We have faith in you.
Next question comes from Eileen, and the subject is short girl problems. So Eileen actually wrote in a couple of months ago and I answered one of her questions. She at the time was seeing a woman and they were talking about having some sex with vibrators, I believe. But she has written in again and said that unfortunately her girlfriend moved away and they broke up. So she's getting back into the game of dating and she's met a really super hot guy who lives right around the corner from her house. And she's really interested in having a hookup with him, but she has a problem. And she says, I'm about 4'9 or 4'10 and he's about 6'5 or 6'6. We haven't had sex yet, but he is very large and very thick. Like 8 inches long. And I am very petite. She says, I've had sex with people with penises, but only who were smaller and thinner, maybe in the 4 to 6 inch range. I know that muscles can stretch more than you think, but I'm also really worried because I can barely get 2 of my fingers inside of myself. So do you have any advice that you can give me that will help me with this new situation other than just lube and having him finger me? I really don't want him tearing me in two, and that's basically what I think would happen if we had sex. I love you so much and thank you for any advice. Love, Eileen.
The questions tonight are just tailored for me.
Oh, yay! Okay, good.
There's not quite the same size difference with my partner and I, but it sounds like the potential partner and my partner are rocking the same equipment.
Yes.
And I am a professional sex educator, among many other things, and am someone who has done pro sex work and had a ton of sex in my life. And once I found out what he was packing, I almost like was like, nah, I can't.
Yes.
I had a child at this point and was like, no, that's not going to fit up there.
Yeah.
And it does eventually. You have it with lube, have him finger. Yeah. That's making sure that you are as turned on and as ready to go as possible.
Yes.
the most important thing that we're looking for here.
Yeah.
Your comfort level, being afraid of the size of what's coming at you, while totally understandable, is going to keep you clenched up.
Mm-hmm.
Is going to keep you tight. And what happens when you are as aroused as you can get is everything loosens up.
Yeah.
Yeah. The tight pussy, that's not actually a great thing.
Right.
If we're rocking really tight pussy, we're rocking really nervous pussy. Like,
yeah. Or super unaroused pussy.
Or super unaroused pussy.
Yep.
So getting to the point where you are comfortable and where you are feeling turned on, however that works for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then like how we did it was I started up being on top so that I could control, you know, how fast, how much. And like I eased on, like it was like the longest getting on a dick in the history of getting on dicks.
So we're going to be here about an hour.
So we're going to take this. We're going to take this about like quarter inch by quarter inch by quarter inch.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm still alive. Okay, okay, okay. And then like once we got as far as it was going, because let's, you don't have to shove all 8 inches up there.
Right.
Once I got as far as we were going to go and everything was like, I was like, okay, and now I need to take a minute. And I took a minute,
mm-hmm.
and then started to feel around and what was okay.
Yeah.
And best sex of my life.
Yeah.
Was not a size queen. Still am not. I still don't consider myself a size queen, but whew. Oh, best sex ever.
Yay. I could not agree with you more on everything that you said. I mean, first, confronting that internalized fear is so important, because I think too many of us in all bodies, because this super applies to anal sex too.
Oh yes.
You know, of like so many of us don't realize that the fear or the trauma that we've had in the past can really sink into our bodies and have this like very real somatic experience where you may feel like you're relaxed, but inside you still haven't really confronted those fears. And so there's this clenching that's still happening in your body. Mm-hmm. And so finding ways to really give yourself permission to relax, and maybe relaxing means having all kinds of sex that doesn't involve intercourse, mm-hmm. so that you can just get used to each other and feel comfortable like asking for what you want from him, and so that you can just really get to know each other's arousal patterns and all that kind of stuff. I think that's such great advice. And then you're so right, like, you know, too many of us think that 5, 10, 15 minutes is enough to be like super duper fully engorged, aroused, relaxed, like in really in it. And for some people, especially those with vulvas, it can take 30 or 40 minutes of awareness and touching and kissing. And like for me, actually, sometimes it takes an orgasm or two before, mm-hmm. I'm like in super arousal mode.
Yeah. Before anorgasmia. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So like my partner and I, when we have kind of gone into fisting mode a couple of times, that really only works for me after I've had a few orgasms.
Yeah.
And so I'm fully relaxed. I'm fully in my body. I'm like really surrendering to, you know, what's happening, and everything's feeling good. And like, now we can start trying to do this thing, but we can't start there.
No, no, no.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Totally with you. 1,000%.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, you're so right, Eileen, that lube, like all the lube, and make sure it's a good lube, like,
yes.
either a silicone lube or like a really thick gel water-based lube, like a good lube.
Yeah.
And, fingers, toys, all that kind of stuff. But whatever you need to do to get super aroused and fully engorged and ready, and then you getting to be in control. I loved your longest getting on a dick ever, but
it was the longest in the history of long dicks.
But I think that's so important, you know, by you going at your own pace, You just removed one more barrier of the potential fear in clenching.
Right. So, it's totally fine to be like, I need to take a breather.
Yeah.
Because you like in our first time, I needed a couple like, okay, we got to stop. We got to slow down. This is becoming painful and I'm not here for pain.
Yeah.
You know, personal thing. But, and I still, we've been together for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I will still need be like, okay, I need a break because you are going to break me.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And they should not have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've found that, people who have larger than average are on the bigger side of the penises.
Mm-hmm.
They have experience.
Yeah.
With people being afraid.
Yes.
And have with people having trepidation.
Right.
And I am seriously hoping that this person follows that that personal experience of
mm-hmm.
mine.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can also be understanding and will have had this experience before, experienced that trepidation and have made it over.
Yes, exactly. And if it gets to the point where intercourse is on the table and he doesn't know how to navigate that, or he's being impatient, then guess what? He doesn't get to have sex with you. Because he doesn't deserve your vagina.
Yeah, no, he has proven himself or themselves unworthy.
Right. I mean, I totally think you're right that this is doable. And I think, you know, culturally speaking, because we value this, like, tightness myth so much, that I think oftentimes we don't really realize just how amazing our bodies are in all the things that they can do and accommodate given the right time and context and headspace.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, like giving yourself permission to be creative and to go slow and to not rush, and your body will probably surprise you. But you may not have put it in that situation before, so you might have to get curious and just take some time to experiment with different things. And I think that could be a really fun process to do with somebody if you're willing to do that.
Hopefully playfulness and understanding mm-hmm. is in abundance in this situation.
Yes.
So you can have some incredibly awesome sex.
Exactly. Yes. And of course, Eileen, I would love a report back to find out, does this happen for you and how does it go? And please report back since you're a loyal listener who's written in before.
Yay. Yeah.
Thank you so much for writing in with this. You know, one of the things that constantly comes up on the podcast is we've gotten so many questions from men who feel ashamed of having penises that are on the smaller side. But in reality, when it really comes down to the reality of bodies and sex, sometimes I think that it's a greater curse to be on the bigger side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, anal sex can be completely off the table for lots of people and for all different mm-hmm. kinds of vaginas. If you're not willing to take the time, it's also super off the table. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure that this guy has encountered this before. So
yeah.
We have a question about threesomes. Are you up for that?
Oh, always.
All right. So we got an email from someone who's called themselves Help Me. And the subject, help me, yes. And the subject is threesome with my wife. So it says, after 20 years together and me asking for her for a threesome almost weekly, which that bothers me a little bit, but anyway.
Yeah.
So, and me asking her for a threesome almost weekly, my wife has finally agreed to discuss the possibility. Recently, we gave a female friend a ride home after a night of drinking. The friend mentioned licking pussy and not being able to find a willing couple. Ever since that night, my wife has been talking about wanting to be with the friend as a threesome. The other night, my wife had a dream that involved the friend and admitted to not being able to get off without thinking about her. So I'm relatively sure this threesome is going to happen in the near future. However, I'm in need of advice as to what boundaries we should set up or rules we should discuss so that this doesn't become an awkward situation the day after. We've talked a little bit, and my wife said she would be uncomfortable with me fucking the friend, but anything else and oral is fine. So any suggestions that you have for navigating this would be appreciated and helpful. Thanks.
Oh, this could be a minefield.
I know.
I mean this as lovingly and as respectfully as possible. Like this, the weekly asking.
Yeah.
Might have been a little bit much, but from the rest of the letter, it does sound like the wife is interested.
Yes.
And really, really wants to do this, not just to please her partner, but mm-hmm. to do it for herself. And that's
really important.
that is the most, like, if, because you're dealing with a friend, if any party is going into this, feeling coerced mm-hmm. or forced or anything other than 1,000% hell yes.
Yeah.
There are, because I've had these go wrong many times for not everyone being on the same page and people feeling like, maybe I would have taken that a little bit slower, because that's a learning curve. You are less likely to have this all blow up in a bad way if everyone is all on the same page, if you have talked about this while not intoxicated.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly important. Talk about this when they're not intoxicated. Sounds like the friend was putting the feelers out. So that is awesome. I see a lot of good signs for a positive situation. This could be a minefield.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to rules in a sexual encounter, you do want to find out where your comfort zone isn't, and you don't want to cross beyond comfort mm-hmm. for obvious reasons. Having an idea of what you're comfortable and what you're comfortable with and what you're not comfortable with is a great idea. Sometimes going into things with, like, this is a hard, fast no is a great boundary. Like,
yeah.
it's great to have up there. You, like, you know exactly how far to go, and don't push it past there.
Yep.
Do not push it past there. I'm going to say it again. Don't push it past there. Now, if you've talked about this while you're in a sober headspace and everybody seems on board, well, I'm not a big drinker to begin with, but I know that some people have, like, a drink or two to calm nerves.
Yeah. I've done that with a hookup or two.
Yeah. I mean, I can't, like, yeah, it's, I realize that this is very common. Just in my experience, keep it to mm-hmm. like a little bit tipsy and not into drunk.
Right. Where mistakes and miscommunication are rampant.
Will happen. They yes. will. It will happen in this situation. It's just, it's going to.
Yeah.
And then follow let things happen as they happen. How to not make it weird the next day.
Mm-hmm.
If you've gone into it and you've talked about it and everybody's on the same page and the sex was awesome and great and, or at least fun, because you never know.
Right.
But at least fun. And you're waking up the next day, taking care of everybody's emotional needs immediately is vital, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Check in with wife, check in with friend, like wife and friend, check in with each other. Like
mm-hmm.
you may experience feelings of jealousy for her interest in the friend that yep. you may not expect. Like you may be going into it thinking like this is really hot, and then getting into it and having either feelings of jealousy or suddenly feeling inadequate mm-hmm. happens a lot. If it happens, it's normal, and you can get past that. Just stay within yourself
yeah.
and stay connected to how you're feeling, where you're at, and where as connected to the other people as possible.
Yeah. One of the things that's really important is if you and your wife don't tend to recover well from failures, that's probably an area that you need to strengthen before you try something new like this.
Yes.
Because I think one of the main ways that people fail in relationship, regardless of whether it's threesomes or like what to cook for dinner or where to go on vacation, is when the shit hits the fan and things don't go the way you're thinking or expectations aren't met and there's feelings of disappointment or frustration, not knowing how to reconnect and rebuild after one of those failures, I think is one of the main ways relationships start to build resentment and crumble. And so if you're going to go into this new situation where you're potentially having this threesome, I think that it would be really wise to just have a conversation with your wife of like, how are we going to come back together afterwards? How are we going to recap? How are we going to handle if something tough comes up? Like, what are ways that we can kind of work through anything if it doesn't go the way we're expecting, and just have that conversation up front so that if things do go wrong and you step on one of those landmines, you've already laid the groundwork of like, well, that didn't go the way we thought, but we already talked about, okay, we're going to like do this to kind of reconnect. So I think that's really important. I love everything you said about making sure everybody's doing it for themselves and not to do it for somebody else, because that can create a lot of pain.
I have not seen that or experienced that go well in my life. And I have had a lot of threesomes.
Yeah. Speaking from personal experience, I have said yes to something for someone else, rather than yes, because I wanted it, and it led to one of the worst pains that I've ever experienced.
Same.
Yeah. So that self-betrayal can really wreak havoc on everyone involved.
And it can be sneaky. Like it can sneak up a couple of days, couple of weeks, couple of months down the road.
Yeah.
This is to a degree, well, I mean, it's a life-changing experience, and it should be treated as such. And we also, if you guys have been together and monogamous for 20 years, we should probably brush up on safer sex.
Yeah.
And what the plans are there, yeah. And find a place of agreement that's comfortable for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Latex gloves. Great plan.
Yes.
Saran wrap over vulvas. Great plan.
Yeah.
Having toys handy, great plan.
Yep.
Having condoms at the ready and lube at the ready, very important.
Yeah. And also, like, knowing that you're going into this to do something fun and new and being excited about that, but then also planning for the practicality and the fact that anytime we try something new for the first time, we tend to not be very good at it.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with being with things not going as smoothly as you planned.
Right.
And it not looking like a porno, because it's not going to look like a porno.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, the number of times that I've heard folks with a penis say that they were so excited for their first, like, group sex or whatever, and then their penis was so soft the entire time is really common.
Really common.
So, yeah, just, like, allowing for that to be part of the experience and being fun. And then just one of the other things that I'll offer to help me is I think it's so important how you were talking about if there are definitely like hard, clear boundaries of, I mean, he said that his wife said she wasn't comfortable with him fucking the friend. So that might be just like a hard limit going in. It's so much better to leave an experience wishing for more than to regret what you did. And so I think a rule has to be when you go into something like this of, we're going to set the boundaries and the container we're going to play within. And no matter how badly in the moment we want to change that, or what a great idea it seems when you've got a dick in a mouth to cross one of those lines, that you don't yield on that. And that way everyone feels safe that it's not a moving target, and that something that could potentially end very badly or hurt someone's feelings doesn't happen in the heat of the moment. And if afterwards everything goes really well and you think, God, I really, really wanted to fuck your friend, and everybody felt really good, well, then now it's an opportunity to do it again and maybe just have different container that you're playing inside of.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is as long as it is done mindfully.
Yeah.
And openly, honestly, and where everyone is open to vulnerability.
Yeah.
This can be a beautiful new addition and a beautiful new chapter in your life and your sex life and your marriage.
Yeah.
It can also be a lot of minefields, mm-hmm. and you're gonna learn something yeah. about yourself and your relationship in this experience. And just you want to try and craft this so that what you learn is a positive instead of a negative.
Exactly. Like you might go. I mean, he says he's been asking her weekly for a threesome for 20 years, which I could do a whole different episode on how I did really disagree with that. But you've had this fantasy for 20 years and you might actually get into the situation and for whatever reason, just feel like this is not at all what I thought it would be. And I don't think I want to do this again. Mm-hmm. And that's to me a success. Yeah. Like you've just learned something. And so now you have a different story that you get to explore and a new fantasy that you get to find and a new conversation you get to have with your wife. And so like allowing for all the possibilities, not just like the porn sexy fantasy that's in your head.
Yeah. Because it's with 20 years of buildup, that's a lot to live up to.
Yeah.
So be prepared to not live up to what you've imagined it to be, but be open to what happens, if that makes sense.
Yep. I totally agree. Well, I actually had a couple of other questions lined up, but we're over an hour at this point.
I am a verbose person.
Well, and we just had such juicy questions.
Tailor made for me.
Yeah, well, which totally excites me because I knew the one question about anxiety would be a great fit, but the other ones I just kind of like randomly pulled out of the backlog. And then when you were like, these are perfect for me, yes. I just felt like that was kismet. So yes, I would love for you to tell everybody how they can stay in touch and where they can find you and read all about Orgasm Quest and follow along with all of the amazing work that you do. So how can people stay in touch?
People can find me at KristaAnn.com, and my name is CristaAnne. I'm special.
As you should be, with all those fucking rainbows.
Anne with an E, and there is no H in that Krista. You can find me on Twitter as at Pinkness, because Pinkness.
Right.
And you can find me on Facebook as /SexGeek, because I got that shit.
Oh, hell!
Down.
Reed Mihalko must be so jealous.
Uh-huh. No, I realized that I had forgotten what my URL for my page was for the longest time, and I looked it up, and I was like, I got Sex Geek. I'm going to go tell Reed.
That's amazing. Well, we will have links to your website and your social media on sexgetsreal.com, where everyone can check out the notes from this episode and find all the places to download it. And of course, at sexgetsreal.com, you can also go to the contact form and send in your own questions and feedback. I love hearing from you. You can also follow Sex Gets Real on Twitter at Sex Gets Real, which is awesome and easy. So don't forget that. And I just want to thank all of our listeners who wrote in. And I want to thank you, KristaAnn, for coming on and not only sharing your story, but also helping me field these questions with such sex positive grace and sharing your story. I think that was just wonderful.
It was my pleasure. And hopefully you'll have me again.
Oh, absolutely. I think that would be so fun. So thank you so much for listening, everybody. This is Dawn Sarah with Sex Gets Real. And I will talk to you next week. Bye.